It's another episode of the Gut Munchers podcast. I believe this is episode 10. I'm John, and with me, as always, is...
Jason, the animal, pain.
Live from Japan.
Yes.
Land of the rising sun.
It is, the land of the rising sun.
Home of the irradiated dinosaur.
Home of the irradiated Godzilla, maybe.
Home of the giant Mothra.
Home of Smap.
Home of the Hitler Cupid dolls.
Yes. We're going back and getting someday, probably.
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah, that'd be awesome. You definitely need to bring... Because, you know, that'd be a hit in Kentucky.
It would be. I'll send it to those Hill Jacks in Pressensburg, yeah. Whatever. They'll appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So yeah.
That's a way to start off the show, isn't it?
Exactly. I think, what did you say? This is episode 10?
Episode 10, double digits.
Oh,
we've almost
hit
puberty.
I know. By the end of the summer, we will have been hitting puberty, so that's great.
Soon we'll no longer be attracted to Michael Jackson's ghost.
Exactly. We can finally escape the evil Jackson.
Hey, was that too soon?
I don't know, man. Actually, right now, downstairs, they're having on MTV Japan, they're having a Michael Jackson tribute show. So I was watching that this morning. They had Thriller on there and a bunch of behind the scenes clips with John Landis. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, Thriller's actually. I'm not gonna lie, dude. I mean, you know, I think that guy was a little freaky deaky, but Thriller's still the best album I ever bought, top to bottom. I'm sorry, every song on there was a hit.
Yeah. Well, I like Michael Jackson's music. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and act like, you know, I'm not a fan of his music or, you know, or whatever. I think the guy's definitely was a strange ranger.
Oh, yeah.
By his own admission, pretty much, towards the end. But
he was a wacky dude.
But, I mean, nothing can take away from the fact that his music was awesome. So, I mean, you know, at least in my opinion. And, obviously, I'm in the majority with that because, you know, he was famous the world over. So.
And nobody dangled a baby quite like MJ.
You know, nobody dangled a baby blanket. Just quite like MJ. That's true. He definitely has the world record of being the most kooky on that aspect of being on babies in Germany, of all places.
Well,
so,
you know,
the last time Germans dangled babies, it was Jewish babies as they were throwing them off.
Oh no! Oh no! Now we've just gone crazy. now we're over the edge. I'm sure we're considered tasteless now.
I know. Well, we have to, you know, live up to Gut Munchers, what people expect from us, right?
Well, no, I mean, I'm a pretty classy dude. I don't know about you.
Are you classy? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, dude. Sir, I'm totally classy.
Okay. Well, I'm glad somebody's going to class this up for us because I'm not classy.
Oh, no, I'm like the classiest dude you ever meet.
Oh, are you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. So I guess this is what passes for witty banter amongst a couple of us here.
Yeah. Sorry if this is the best we can do, but that's the best we can do.
Yeah, well, you know... Both our fans might turn off by now.
So what are we talking about today, then?
Michael Jackson. Oh, wait, no. Well, we already did that. Well, actually, we're going to have an exciting show, unlike the intro here. We're going to have an exciting show for you guys. First of all, I know Ed's going to stop by for an episode of – or an episode for a segment, another Mom and Pop video shop segment. I'm going to save what he's doing. I actually do know what we're going to be talking about, but I'm going to save it for the actual segment.
Save it for later.
I also plan on having my man Steve stop by. And people might have noticed in episode 8 I said that, and then he never stopped by. And that was totally my fault. Totally, totally my fault. But luckily, we slipped his segment into last episode. Episode 9 was the Blue Underground show. Which we've got a lot of good feedback on the Blue Underground show. So for everybody that emailed us and chatted to us, thank you very much. Ed and I were just kind of fans of Blue Underground, and we had a good time. Did you listen to the show?
Yeah, I did listen to the show. It gave me lots of you know, I'm not a huge fan of all the exploit. I shouldn't say I'm not a huge fan. I don't know much about the exploitation and the different kind of like Italian stuff, you know, Italian horror stuff. So it was interesting to hear both of you guys because I respect both of you all and your opinions. To kind of, you know, hear you all go back and forth on some, you know, the finer points of the movies and the special features that some of y'all talked about and some of the discs and Blue Underground, like, you know, provided. So I'm definitely, I think after that, I'm worked out a deal with another friend of mine who's going to be sending me some Blue Underground DVDs based on some of your recommendations. So
cool.
I'll be giving them a whirl here pretty soon.
Are you going to, do you watch Giallos at all?
No, not really. I don't know if you consider Suspiria a giallo, but no, that's only one I've
really giallo.
So that's the only one I've ever watched.
I've seen check out some of the giallos.
I saw Inferno.
Well, that's part of the Three Mothers trilogy. That's not really a giallo.
And I hated Inferno. So yeah, okay, but
I'm not a hater on Inferno, but I think I'm more with staff member Steve on that one.
Yeah, I know Steve loves Inferno. It's terrible. Yeah. He championed me to watch the movie, so I watched it. And it took me like a week to get through it, and it was like I'd rather go to the dentist.
Well,
I almost rather go to Corbin Burnson's dentist.
But anyway, sorry about that. I didn't mean to derail us. But speaking of Steve, we get another episode, another segment of Sensei Cinema that'll be on the show too. So we've got those two things, and then you and I are gonna. This is a Jason's pick show. So you picked the two movies. So why don't you tell us what two movies you picked for us to review, including one which I'm sure is going to thrill everybody because I think they were kind of goofing on you about it. At least I think on YouTube they were goofing on you a little bit about it.
Yeah, oh yeah, people like to do that. The first one, which nobody's going to be goofing about, is the David Cronenberg's remake of The Fly.
Yep.
And I think everybody pretty much across the board is a fan of that movie, or definitely finds redeeming qualities in that film. But the second one is definitely a one for me. It's a movie that I really like, but other people crap on it. That's Dracula 2000, and I really like the movie. I think it's an interesting, fun film, but it's definitely a popcorn, check your brain at the door film. But I like it, and so I'm interested to hear your take on it, and maybe if we get feedback on this episode, what people might say about it. So yeah, for sure.
Well, and then I guess just to let everybody know that you mentioned feedback, if you guys have a question, concern, feedback, just want to mention something about the show, tell us we're full of crap, tell me I'm fat and stupid and bald, send me an email at gutmunchers@gutmunchers.com. And if you ask a question, we might answer it on the show. But so far, nobody's asking any questions. They're just giving us feedback. And we do appreciate the email, so thanks a bunch. And like Jason said, if you have any questions, want to tell us we're full of crap for saying something about a movie we said, just send us a note.
If you want to tell me
how sexy I am, I'll send an angry email back telling you you're an idiot. So it's all good.
Now, if you want to tell me how sexy I am and how much of a lady killer I am, you can go ahead and leave those messages as well.
You leave those messages, and I will come to your house and kick you in the jimmy.
Hey, man, you just can't help it that some people just find me special like that.
Yeah. Somebody be all
but
like,
yeah.
Checking.
What?
Like, somebody all like, I love me some Jason Animal Pain.
Exactly. I have my own fan site set up already to go.
Yeah. Even after straight camp?
Oh, dang.
Yeah, sorry, fellas. He went to straight camp, so. He won't be answering those ones.
Yeah, it was right after I got finished with my Jesus camp.
But if you guys are upset about Jason, you can always send those emails to Steve. He likes them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, since Steve's not here to defend himself, I'll goof on him.
Yeah, I think Steve's still hanging out with Bruno. What are you talking about?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, that was cold. All right.
Oh.
All right, so I'm sorry. We better get back on topic here.
We were on topic, ever?
Oh, well, that's true, too. But, hey, you know.
So, okay.
We can at least pretend. We can do it, you know.
Well, you know, it's like anything else. I tell people, this is not a professional show. This is just us messing around once a month or twice a month. And if you're listening, you should know by now what the heck we're like. And leave us the heck alone if you don't like it. Just don't listen.
Yeah, because this is all done with smoke and mirrors anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
All right. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Which movie you want to do first?
Let's do Dracula 2000 first.
Dracula 2000?
Yeah, because that means they have to actually listen to the show to get to The Fly.
Okay. all right, so what we're going to do is take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Dracula 2000.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's special. All right, we'll be right back. Blah. What the crap, dude?
We'll be right back.
All right, damn it. We'll be right back after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
Dracula is back. In the first Now Dracula movie, Dracula AD 1972. And with this new motion picture, an unrivaled event, Horror Ritual. You will participate with a Transylvanian vampire himself, swearing you in as an honorary member of the Count Dracula Society. He comes back from the living dead to extend you his personal invitation.
Join me in the horror ritual.
You heard it with your own ears from his blood-red lips. Get your honorary membership card when you see the new Dracula movie, Dracula AD 1972, and participate in the horror ritual. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hey fans, it's Ken Forey. Just want to tell you about Mail Order Zombie. Great company. They review zombie films, any zombie film, every zombie film. And it's something you should tune into. So if you get a chance, go to the website, look these guys up, Mail Order Zombie, and find out what the hot zombie films are today. What's going on? These guys are right on the cutting edge of reviewing zombie movies. And if you're a zombie, or you want to be a zombie, or you're thinking about being a zombie, or your mom's a zombie, your dad's a zombie, or your damn mother-in-law's a zombie, tune into Mail Order Zombie, baby. You'll find out what's going on. Ken Forey, and that's out.
We're back. This is the Gut Munchers podcast. I'm John, doing a very bad Walter Cronkite impersonation because he's dead. So I guess my Walter Cronkite impersonation would be this.
That's terrible, man. Walter Cronkite died and you're making fun of him.
I'm decomposing. Hey! It's the little one.
Yeah, he's making his debut.
His debut. He's the Coco host.
He's the Coco host.
Coco host. Coco. That's his new name for the show, Coco.
Coco.
Coco
yeah,
the Wonder Lad.
Awesome.
Yeah, see now he's got a code name for the show. He's Coco the Wonder Lad.
Coco the Wonder Lad. Why isn't my show
in a mood today? Can you tell?
You're what?
I'm in a very strange mood.
You are, but that's because you're strange anyway, so there you go.
That's true. That's true. So we're going to talk about our first movie over this show.
All right, let's do it.
We're going to talk a little bit about Dracula Y2K.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Tell me what it's about, brother.
All right, you have Christopher Plummer playing Abraham Van Helsing, who is in modern day. And you might be thinking, how's that possible? Because it's modern day, England, and Van Helsing should have been long dead. Well, they have a flashback, and it shows that what happened is that he tricks Dracula into a trap, and in the process of trying to slay Dracula, like one of these harpoons that they're using or some kind of staff with a huge knife on it, cuts through Dracula and goes into Abraham Van Helsing where their blood mixes, and so then that shows you in a flashback of like the 1800s. And then you go back forward, and it shows Abraham Van Helsing as an antiques dealer who collects mostly weaponry of ancient times. And it also has Johnny Lee Miller, where people will know him from like the movie Hackers and Trainspotting. He plays Abraham Van Helsing's like apprentice, though he does not know that Abraham Van Helsing actually is that actual Abraham Van Helsing. He thinks that he's a relative or an ancestor of him, and he doesn't find out till later that that's not the case. He actually is him, and what we find out is that Abraham Van Helsing has built a huge monument around the casket of grave of Dracula, and he uses his blood to stay alive. So he has these leeches that he puts on Dracula through whatever means, and he pulls him out of this casket, and he puts him on himself, and he takes the blood out and injects it into himself. Well, then he has a daughter named Mary Van Helsing, who actually ends up being like a hybrid of human slash vampire because of using the Dracula blood. And of course, you know, Dracula ends up escaping, and it's all you know, a big elaborate thing. So it takes place first in England, and it ends up in New Orleans, and that's where all the mayhem ensues. So that's pretty much the plot synopsis of it. And Johnny Lee Miller ends up becoming like a vampire hunter, and ends up tracking them down with the help of Abraham Van Helsing, the Dracula, and all the ones he's turned into vampires. So there you have it.
Okay, so. Let me put you in Perry Mason mode by talking a little bit about what I think.
Okay.
Okay.
Because I'm sure it's great.
Well, I'm going to tell you, there's some things that I want to say some positive things about the movie.
That's good. It's like talking to an ugly girl. Before you break the hard news to her, you tell her the good stuff.
I rather enjoyed the first half hour of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was pretty decent. The camera angles are... the camera work in the movie is actually... noticeably pretty good. There's some interesting angles. There's some interesting shots. The way that it's framed at times is good. And that's all really very noticeable in the first 30 minutes of the movie.
Okay.
And then I don't know if they fired the director of photography, but like basically as soon as they get on the airplane and they leave England, because what happens is what Jason did say, they steal the casket and they load the casket up and they fly. They don't know what's in it, but then these criminals fly towards America. That first like half hour is about half hour of the movie is in England, and that first half hour I thought was good. Again, the shots were cool. There were some interesting angles, and I did enjoy that. Okay, the other thing is dude, I'm watching this movie and I watched it when it first came out. I rented it from Blockbuster and I hadn't seen it since. I had not realized how many people were in this freaking movie.
Right, that's what I was
Jerry Ryan has a small part. Jerry Ryan, 7 of 9, the hottest woman to ever wear a unitard in a Star Trek series. She has a smallish part. She's really good. I think the girl that plays Dracula's daughter was in this TV show called The Others, and I really liked her. Omar Epps is in the movie. There's a guy that was in the Ocean's 11 series of films with George Clooney. He's in the movie for a brief period of time.
Vitamin C's in this. Come on, dude.
Pardon?
Vitamin C.
Yeah.
She's in it. She plays one of the other vampire chicks.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of decent young actors in this movie.
The guy from 70's Show?
The guy, Danny, I forget his
something
last name.
Hmm? Yeah, Danny something or another, yeah.
But so there's a lot of young actors, and they do a decent job. But they all get killed off pretty quick, mostly. I also wanted to say that Christopher Plummer in this movie automatically gives us some credibility.
Right.
All right, so those are good things about the film that I liked. It's got a decent young cast. They do a good job. Oh, and I don't want to give any spoilers.
Oh, that's fine.
Okay. I'm not going to give any spoilers because this might be a movie a lot of people haven't seen. So I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
Of all. Now, of course, the movie acts as if they were real people that inspired the Bram Stoker novel. So they don't actually follow the history of Dracula from the novel. Dracula's origin is really very good.
Yes, I agree.
Very clever, very good. I kind of like the ending. I wish they had given you a little more in the ending, that you kind of see, because they kind of hint the fact that when he, and again, I don't want to give spoilers, but when he basically releases her,
right,
that he's kind of forgiven,
right,
which is why he can die.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's the case or that's what they were going for, and I wish they had made it a little more clear, but I do love that origin story. So those are positives.
Okay.
Overall, I found this to be a very mediocre movie. It does some things that annoyed the heck out of me. I understand why they did it. They explain it later on, but like him running around in the daylight just bugged me. I hate it when vampires run around in the day. I hate it. Okay. they use in scenes that blaring metal, heavy metal music a lot that right. seems to plague a lot of newer horror movies. I didn't like that so much. I thought the camera work after the first 30 minutes where I really enjoyed it just went straight to pot. And it started out as something very interesting. And then mm-hmm. it became that direct-to-DVD movie. It kind of came down to that level of quality for the last half of the film. I'm actually reading my notes. It also has probably, and this is kind of awkward to say, but probably one of the worst sex scenes I've ever seen filmed, where they're floating and rolling around on the ceiling. And I'm like, hey, dude, look out, there's a ceiling fan. that one, I'm kind of sitting there rolling my eyes going, this is bad. And then the one thing I do have to say, dude, holy crap, product placement. When's yes. the last time did you watch this for this review?
Yeah.
How many times do I need to see that they work in a Virgin Music store? There's a Virgin van in the one big fight scene. They're wearing Virgin Music t-shirts. And the Virgin logo shows up like in a half a dozen other scenes if you pay attention. Did Virgin, like, pay a ton of money for this movie?
Oh, I'm sure.
So product placement bugged the hell out of me. And the sex scene, like I said, and the walking around in the day, and the metal music. But I don't know. I mean, for me, I found it mediocre. And actually, I found it frustrating, too, because it had some elements that I thought were very interesting. Like I said, I did have some real positive things to say about it, and I did, and I'm not going to sit here. And, you know, dude, whenever I see somebody on the internet go, this is like the worst movie I've ever seen, I'm going to take them that they're being sincere. And then I'm going to have to say to them, you obviously don't watch as many movies as I do.
Right.
Because this isn't the worst movie I've ever seen. I know that this is another one of those Wes Craven Presents movies.
Right. I think it was almost like the first one, actually.
Yeah. And I know he gets a lot of crap for that. But this is a movie that I could see somebody like Wes Craven looking at and saying, yeah, I'll put my name on it. Because it's not awful. Like I say, yeah. I found it to be kind of mediocre, and I found it to be very frustrating. And let me go back and explain what I meant by frustrating, and then I'll let you talk. It was so close. Because there was something else that I wanted to mention, which is there's a couple of one-liners in this movie that are just funny as heck. Funny as hell. I mean, I'm sorry. I hear the little guy in the background, and I don't want to swear because I'm afraid he's going to hear me say a naughty word and start repeating it, and then Shoko's yeah. going to be angry with me. But that one line where he's fighting the Omar Epps character, and he kills him, and it just I was actually laughing at this line, and it's you know, never ever F with an antique dealer.
Yeah,
I thought that was a fairly good line. So there was. There's some beautiful women in it. It's got a great killer Dracula origin story that's absolutely, I would say, completely unique because I've seen similar themes. But it was very cool. And like I said, Christopher Plummer, the cast, the story, some of the one-liners. It had a lot going for it. And I actually think the minute it leaves England and goes to New Orleans – is when it just starts doing some things, I just shake my head. So that's my take on it, and I'll go ahead and let you respond. Because I know you like this movie quite a bit, and I'm just, you know, those are my criticisms. So.
Right. Oh, well, I mean, those are all valid, I think, criticisms, really. But I think for me, it's a little bit of a nostalgia thing. It was kind of like right when I was getting back into horror movies. I think it was one of the first movies I probably saw in the theaters after being away for so long. That I kind of got into, and like you said, it was like a young cast, and a lot of people I knew from other stuff.
Did it play in theaters?
I'm sorry?
Did it play in the theaters?
Yeah, it played in the theaters.
I did not know that, dude. I really, honestly, I didn't catch it.
Yeah, I think all the other ones went direct to DVD or VHS or whatever, but yeah, so yeah, it was like, you know, I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theaters, and you know, I really liked it. There was a lot of things about it that you'd mentioned that I liked, but the coolest thing, I think, that I really enjoyed about it was the young cast. You know, Johnny Lee Miller, I knew from Hackers. Omar Epps was in, like, 1,000 things. Vitamin C, what's her name? Her real name is, like, Colleen Fitzpatrick. You know, of course, I like Christopher Plummer. And then, you know, somebody we didn't really mention was Gerald Butler, Mr. 300. played Dracula. And I thought he did a great job as Dracula, quite frankly. I like, again, the origin story. I think that's definitely unique. And it's something that I don't know what you thought, but what do you think about, before I get into the origin story, what did you think about Gerald Butler playing Dracula?
You notice one of the things I never mentioned was a Dracula character itself.
Right. So there's a reason behind that, I guess.
And very Anne Rice-y. I mean, very uninspired. Very, look at me, I have long hair, and I'm brooding. So, he's all right. I mean, I found him to be the least impressive and interesting character in the movie. In fact, vampire-wise, I thought the Omar Epps in the... And I forget the woman, but the one woman that worked for the Van Helsing character that was in on the robbery.
Jennifer Esposito or something.
Yeah, she was a good vampire. The scene where she's in the interrogation room with and that whole creepy bit there, I thought she was very good. It almost seemed to me that the Dracula character just wasn't... He's central to the story, but he wasn't the spice. You know what I'm saying? He was just kind of there. He drove the storyline, but I found the Lucy character to be interesting. I really found the Jerry Ryan character to be interesting, but to be honest, it probably has nothing to do with her role. I just have always found Jerry Ryan to be very interesting, no matter what she's doing. He was all right. He didn't strike me as any big deal. Again, I kind of had wished. I don't know that he was given a whole lot to do. It's not his fault. To me, it was just a very generic. Portrayal because I will say I got the idea that he wasn't really the one thing that I think he did well, Gerard Butler, and I think it worked well with the origin story, this is not a gleeful Dracula. He's angry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's angry, he's not gleeful, he's not he ha ha ha, which makes him probably a less of an interesting character. He doesn't have any of the one-liners or anything. He's just pissed off, and that works for the role. But yeah, as far as the Dracula character goes, Gerard Butler, I take him, leave him. I don't really. He's not anywhere near my favorite Dracula.
Yeah, again, for me, I think I liked it for the pure fact that at the end, when his origin is revealed, I like the acting that he does there as. That shows the flashbacks of who he is and where he's from, and shows him modern day. Yeah. I liked some of that. I liked some of the acting that he does towards the end of the movie, doing explaining why he is who he is, and stuff like that. So I think, I mean, for me, I see what you're saying, but I don't know. I just kind of like that. And Doug Dracula, but. Again, the origin story is awesome, and like John said, I agree now that we probably shouldn't give it away because it's kind of like a huge plot point. Yeah. You don't want to say because it kind of takes away from the movie if you reveal it right off the bat. But
for me, that's a big strength of the film. I mean,
yeah,
and it's not like this twist either. It's not like this wow, what a twist, like force thing. It's just such an interesting origin for that character.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I like the Omar Earp's character. Talking about one-liners, the part where Johnny Neely Miller is trying to get Omar Epps off of him because, Omar Epps becomes a vampire. And he, like, shows a cross to Omar Epps, and Omar Epps says, "Hey, buddy, crosses don't work on me. I'm an atheist."
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Then what happens is great, too.
Huh?
What happens then is great, too.
Exactly, right. So, I just think it's really good stuff. So, I mean... Yeah, I think what I liked a lot about the camera work and the kind of the film itself was they show a lot of New Orleans, and they show a lot of Mardi Gras or pretend it's Mardi Gras. I don't know if it's actually during Mardi Gras when they filmed, but I thought they did a really good job with like the crowd scenes and the principal actors in and out of the crowds of Mardi Gras and in New Orleans there. And I thought they did a good job of showing lots of the old. Like the swamps and New Orleans,
bayou.
Like those bayou, there you go, the bayou. And then they show a lot of, the actual, French Quarter and stuff. So I liked that. I thought it was kind of cool. I like movies where they kind of show the surrounding area and kind of like makes you feel like the city is also a part of the character of the film. and it's not just like, you know, they're just in a house somewhere off in the distance, and it could be any generic thing. So, I mean, those are some things I liked about it. Again, the young cast I thought was cool. Christopher Plummer, like you said, I thought brought a lot of substance to the film. He looked like he took the role very serious. I mean, for him, it's probably just a paycheck. But, you know, he came and brought the goods, I felt. And like I said, I just thought it was a good movie in general. And, I, you know, probably for me, it's more nostalgia than anything else. But I enjoyed it. I think everybody should give it a try. It's, like John said, it's kind of formula. It's just your typical, you know, vampire movie, like John was saying, you know, kind of brooding Dracula vampire movie in New Orleans, Anne Rice-ish. But for what it is, I enjoyed it. And I think it's definitely worth a view. And, you know, people might be interested to go back and give it another look. Like John said, like, you know, I think I kind of got from you was, you know, you're kind of like, oh, this isn't something I'm going to really dig. But then you kind of watched and you found some things that you actually liked about it. So, you know, maybe other people have the same feeling.
Yeah. Out of four.
Out of four, I give it 2.5.
Okay. I give it 2. You know, 2.5, I'd say it'd be average for me. I found it to be mediocre, like I said, 2. I tell you something right now. Again, the thing that frustrates me with this movie is had they managed to keep up the quality of camera work and had they kept up, I don't know what it was about the story being in England, the part in England was more interesting to me. Had they managed to keep that going, I think I would have liked the movie a lot better. But there's a good cast. It's probably worth the rental, maybe. I couldn't tell anybody to spend any real money on it, though.
Well, it was like under, like, it was like $3 or $4 or under. Wouldn't you say it's worth buying? No?
You know, I guess. I mean,
that's like a rental there.
I watched it in 2000, and the only reason I watched it again was for the review, and I don't think I'll ever watch it again. So,
oh, that's terrible. Okay.
So, I, you know, if I saw it for $3 at Odd Lots or Big Lots, I probably wouldn't buy it because it wouldn't be something I'd watch again.
That's cold. All right, that's fine.
But if you haven't, okay, here's the thing. If you have not seen the movie and you can get it for $3, you might as well take a shot at it.
Yeah.
And then maybe get $2 from it at the used store.
That, nice, dude. Thanks. All right. Well, obviously, I appreciate your honesty. Thank you.
And like I said, there were some – I'm not going to lie, dude. I think, you know – you know, in a weird way, if the movie had been crap from the beginning and all the way through, I probably wouldn't have been as sort of frustrated with it at the end as I was.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really fair because the first half hour of the movie, I'm watching it going, hey, this is a lot better than I remember. And then, it, like I said, they get on the airplane and they fly to New Orleans, and I'm like, oh, no, this is what I remember.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things. I think it had a lot of potential. It really did. Because, I mean, let's be honest, dude. That, again, I cannot stress enough that Dracula origin story for some reason just got me, dude. I'm just like, okay, that is cool. That is very clever.
Well, I'm going to have to give it a shot. I'm going to have to, you know, keep telling people, just look at the origin story. Don't look at the rest of the movie. Just wait for the origin. But, all right. Well, I think we talked that. I talked enough about that wonderful movie. So we can probably move on to the next one here whenever you're ready.
All right. Well, tell you what we're going to do. We'll take a quick break.
All right.
And when we come back, why don't we go ahead and we'll talk a little bit about David Cronenberg's remake of the classic 1950 science fiction movie, The Fly.
All right. Let's do it.
Okay. We'll be back right after this on the Gut Munchers podcast.
An unknown species of horror is born as science fiction becomes science fact.
I've never seen anything like it.
One minute they weren't there, and the next minute they were everywhere.
An army of deadly predators searching, destroying anything in their path.
He's over at Covey's. He's found another 20 or 30 hills just like the one we burned.
Why did they come? What do they want?
The spiders in this area have organized themselves into an aggressive army.
A living, crawling hell on Earth. The Kingdom of the Spiders. A wild science fiction nightmare.
starring William Shatner, Tiffany Bowling, Woody Strode, and introducing Alphabese Davis. Your nightmares will never be the same. Kingdom of the Spiders. The next victim could be you. Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Gut Munchers podcast. We're going to talk about The Fly from 1986. David Cronenberg classic.
Help me! Help me!
Yeah, I don't think so. anyway, so this follows the same basic story as the original, but with a few differences. Jeff Goldblum plays a scientist named Seth Brundle, who is working on a teleportation device. Seth meets a beautiful, and she really was hot back in the day, beautiful reporter named Veronica. They get together and hook up and have some naughty things happening. And then Seth takes a trip in the teleporter. Unfortunately, if you know anything about the original story of The Fly, the fly's in there with him. Now, in the original movie from the 50s, they basically split into a dude with a fly head and a fly with a guy's head. In this movie, their DNA combines, and Jeff Goldblum's Seth Brundle slowly starts to turn into a hybrid of a fly and a man, which is impressive effects. And he starts this downward spiral, becomes more and more fly, less human, which involves puking up acid and slurping up the contents of his supper. And eventually, I guess the only way he figures out he can be whole again is to not try to separate the fly from himself, but to just take a teleportation trip with another person. So he'll be a Brundle fly, and I think it's Veronica he tries to drag in there with him.
Right.
Brundle fly Veronica hybrid. And, of course, that doesn't work out for him because she gets away and then, you know, bad things happen where he becomes a Brundle fly inanimate object combination, and which is again even more gooey, nasty effects. And eventually, good old Veronica has to do away with a double barrel fly swatter, shall we say, to get rid of the Brundle fly combo. And then the movie ends with, I think, is kind of a dream sequence, which is creepy, 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 creepy. So that's the movie in a nutshell. It's a pretty straightforward, basic science fiction horror film. And it is one, I mean, you know, I complain a lot about remakes, but this is one of the handful of remakes that I think does the original justice. Now, I'm going to let you talk a little bit, and then I'll chime in here afterwards. But this is actually a very good film.
Right. Well, I agree. I hadn't seen it forever. I just watched it recently. And I really, really enjoyed the film. And I think that, you know, the special effects is what really, for me, sold it. And David Cronenberg really did a great job with all the makeup effects and having Jeff Goldblum, you know, slowly deteriorate into the fly.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Brundle fly. Was freaking awesome. And I think, I don't know, maybe, I don't know if you picked up on this. I kind of picked up on it. You know, when he did Videodrome, he was talking, there was like a lot of talk about the flesh.
Yeah.
And he talks about, you know, Jeff Goldblum talks about the flesh a lot. Well, at least in one or two scenes in particular in The Fly. Did you pick up on that?
Yeah, I mean.
Do you know what that's really about? Because I don't know. Is there like some underlining meaning? Because I'm not maybe a huge, I'm a huge David Cronenberg fan, but I don't really get into the whole, his psyche and his, the way all that works. Do you know what he's talking about with his, those things?
Not entirely. I know that it's a theme that Cronenberg likes to touch on in some of his films.
Okay.
It's one of those reoccurring things. And honestly, it's one of the things that annoys me about this movie a little bit. And it sort of annoys me about a lot of Cronenberg's films, but I guess I shouldn't, really. Is that it kind of bugs me when a director keeps going back to a similar subject or themes. And, you know, when he's working on an original project, do whatever you want. When you're doing a remake, do you really have to, you know, do that again? Of course, then I guess the original kind of fit maybe what he was going for. But yeah, there's some, like, I don't know. I don't know if it's just what Cronenberg considers nightmarish. I'm not a Cronenberg expert by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, okay. Me either, so.
But I know what you're saying about Videodrome and this, and I think it also comes up in, he did another movie with two guys playing twins, I think it was, with Jeremy Irons. I forget the name of the movie. But the similar thing came up in that as well that I remember.
Okay. Well, see, like, you know, I remember him. I remember, you know, I like Videodrome, mm-hmm. and I like, you know, The Fly. And I noticed the theme had popped up more than once in both films. So I was like, I'll ask you about this. But, yeah, I just saw that. I thought that was interesting because I thought it made sense for The Fly in the movie because kind of like, you know, he's like this – before he, you know, has this – he changes – he's definitely that kind of thinker who, you know, is very scientific and thinking and, like, very, you know, trying to figure out why this happens and what happens if you do this and that and the other. It just kind of had me think, oh, I guess it doesn't feel like it's forced. But do I really know what he's trying to say with it? Not necessarily, but I just felt like, you know, it makes sense. But I agree, Gina Davis does a good job. The one who played Gina Davis' old boyfriend.
Stathis Borans.
Yeah, that guy did a great job.
That's the character's name. The guy's John Getz.
Yeah, John Getz. I mean, I knew that was his, you know, but I didn't know if you knew his first name. But anyways, yeah, John Getz, I thought he did a great job. As well. He would get his all sex boyfriend who wants to keep Gina Davis around just for the sex, and he doesn't really care if they have a relationship. But at the end, he ends up trying to become the hero and all that. And well, actually, I guess he kind of does become the hero in some respects.
Yeah, but it doesn't work out well for him, brother.
It doesn't work out for him, but at least he doesn't, like, run and scream and cry and, you know, leave her there to be, you know, eaten or whatever. So, I mean, you know, you're kind of thinking with that kind of character, that's what's going to happen. But he ends up, you know, kind of manning up. So, you know, I thought, you know, he did a good job. I really liked his character. Again, he's not, like, a gigantic part of the movie, but he definitely has memorable scenes. And it was definitely a real 1980s feel to the movie, which I liked. I've seen the original Fly, and I liked the original Fly quite a bit, but I thought the remake was one, like you said, it was on the same level, if not even better. And I think, again, that goes back to the special effects. And like I said, I hadn't seen it for so long, I kind of forgot the special effects and how the transformation at the end of the movie really takes place and how awesome it looks. And the one thing that sticks out in my mind, actually, is when he first puts the first baboon mm-hmm. in the transportation pod, and, you know, it doesn't turn out too good for the baboon.
No.
That, to me, was just, like, really gross. I was like, oh, God.
The pop goes you the know. Monkey.
Yeah, really. But, you know, I don't know if I have any, like, real deep insight about the movie. I just think, for me, it was a great special effects film that David Cronenberg did, pulled out aces all the way across. I thought Goldblum did an excellent job as Seth Brundle. I thought Gina Davis, who I don't find that attractive then or now, did a great job. I know you thought she was pretty hot, but really a rogue scholar or something like that. But, you know, as far as – I never really find her attractive, but I thought she did an excellent job as Veronica, that's for sure. And, again, I thought – one thing I wanted to mention was, and I might mention this a lot as we do these shows, but directors that take advantage and really make you enjoy the movie with lack of other scenes and other like places and like, you know, scenery and like locations. Mm-hmm. And it pretty much takes place almost exclusively in Seth Brundle's apartment, the whole movie.
And it's for you, not like a warehouse, it's huge, but.
Yeah, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean, like, one location the entire time almost, except for maybe 10 minutes out of the whole movie that's in other locations. But for the most part, it takes place in one location, in like two rooms, basically, over the whole course of the whole movie, two or three rooms. And for you not to get tired of the location, not get tired of, like, thinking, are we ever going to get out of here? Are we going to ever see, you know, New York or wherever we're supposed to be or whatever? I mean, for you just to, like, to really enjoy one location, and I think that goes back to the acting, because the acting is so good that you never, like, your mind never strays and goes, you know, when are we going to see something else? And that goes back to the directing of, like, being able to shoot the same area in different ways to kind of keep it fresh.
See, and here's my take on that, because it's interesting. I was about to say, or one of the things I did want to point out, is I don't think this movie, in my opinion, is as good as the original. I think I think it's a very well-made movie, and it's an excellent movie. It stands on its own. And it is, I mean, as far as remakes go, this is a quality film. But I consider the original to be like a 4 out of 4 movie. I consider this one to be a solid film. But one of the things that I did take away from it, and it was funny because in my notes I do have it written down, is that for me, it did actually, after a while, get a little stagnant and drag a bit. I found it to be a tiny bit slow.
That's hilarious, because I looked at it completely different. Yeah. So
well, that's the whole point of doing reviews, dude. Because it's
totally. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Because you and I never talked about it at all till just now. We don't know how we felt about it.
I mean, now, could anyone else have had that movie take place in that limit of a scene and keep me involved as much as I was, other than somebody who was a quality filmmaker like Cronenberg? I doubt it. And I'm going to agree with you on the fact that Jeff Goldblum, not even so much Gina Davis, but Jeff Goldblum has to carry that movie. A lot of his, if you think about it, a lot of his performance, he's I think it's a video camera he's talking to. Or I don't think it's the audience. I think he's actually recording it. Isn't he recording what's happening?
Yeah. So most of the time he's talking to the camera, or he's talking to his monkey.
Performing by himself, basically, for a big chunk of the film. And Goldblum, I think this might be his best performance.
Oh, come on, dude. Jurassic Park.
Yeah, I'm convinced now this is his best performance. Because if you think about, Goldblum has to carry this movie. And then not only does he have to carry the movie, but then he has to carry a big chunk of the movie and some fairly extensive prosthetics.
Right.
As he degenerates.
What about the prosthetics he had to wear for Transylvania 65,000? Come on.
Well, you know. but seriously, though, I agree with you. Goldblum is great. I think Davis is great. And John Getz also has a wonderful performance.
Yes.
But this is really a big chunk of this film is just Goldblum. This is Goldblum's movie. And I remember after watching this, I just expected, and I don't know what happened to him. Maybe it's his look or his quirky or whatever, his choice of projects. But this movie, really, if you go watch this film, you're like, wow. Gee. For people who kind of consider Goldblum to be that quirky, goofball character actor, you see this and you see him in a totally different light.
Yeah, I agree. I think he just had a bad string of movies or TV shows. And he's never really truly recovered, because I think he's an excellent actor. But for whatever reason, he just hadn't been able to, like, strike gold more than once or twice in his career. And he's kind of been, you know, floating around doing, you know, supporting stuff. But I definitely think he's definitely a kind of director, actor who can do good stuff and can really chew good scenes and, like, really make a movie good. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's just, like I said, lack of material that's given to him or he doesn't have faith in the project, and so he doesn't put his own effort into it or what. But if you go back and look at The Fly, he definitely can hold a movie on his own, I truly believe.
Now, here's the other thing I'm going to say.
Uh-oh.
As much as I think Jeff Goldblum does a great performance, and as much as I like the actors, and as much as I like the story, the entire reason that this movie is as memorable as it is something else that you mentioned. This movie has awesome practical effects.
Yes, in camera
effects,
Practical effects.
The Fly, the various incarnations of The Fly, are incredible.
Yes.
His eating habits are disgusting but wonderful. And then the scenes that have always just burned. The first time I saw them, they burned into my retinas. And the minute you start talking about the movie, these two things cop into my head. And we're talking about the John Getz character, and it doesn't turn out well for him. Is the bit with him puking up on his leg? Because basically, this isn't a spoiler, guys. The Brundlefly is what he refers to himself, is fighting it out with the John Getz character, and he vomits on the guy's right below his knee, and understand he's puking his acid up, and it immediately burns right through the guy's leg, and then he pulls the rest of his leg off, separates it, and then he pukes on the guy's hand, and he has a fist, and you watch the damn thing melt.
Yeah.
Those two scenes, awesome. Those two scenes, along with like the alien popping out of the chest for the first time, and in the thing where the chest opens up and chomps the guy's hands off, those are like scenes that have always stuck with me. Those are like effect scenes that identify with those movies. And the minute you say the name of the movie, that pops into my head.
Right.
So this has iconic effects, good performances, great director, and it is a really wonderful movie. For me, though, I don't put it on that level of classic, like perfect, absolute classic, nothing wrong with it. Because, like I said, there is a part that I think is kind of slow, but I think it's a solid film. It's a great movie.
That's and I mean, maybe I like it a little bit. Like I said, you know, you and I feel a little bit different about it, you know, but. You know, well, I like it better than the original, and what sold for me is the special effects and the singular, almost singular location. So
just let me make myself really very and absolutely clear here. I give the original Fly 4 out of 4 stars. It's a classic, and I think I've mentioned that already. Okay, the remake, this one, I give it 3.5 out of 4. I still recommend the movie. I think it's a wonderful film. And I don't know if it's – I take a little hair off because it's a remake or a little hair off because I did kind of find myself going, it's just still in this one room. What's going on? And like I said, it did drag just a bit for me where I was kind of like, well, this is not, you know, terribly exciting. But I do really think it's a good film.
Okay.
But it's just one of those things where and I'm going to tell you, Jason, right now, if you haven't figured it out yet, I love movies from the 50s, the 40s, the 30s. So when I have a passion for those films, and I hold a lot of those movies in very high regard. So I'm not swayed by the advantage that newer movies have of more gore and better effects and stuff like that. So I'll hold an original like the original Fly up to 4 out of 4, whereas somebody who might not have a love for those old movies as much as I do might not think it's as good as I do. But I grew up watching them. And dude, I'm going to tell you something right now. For the time, that Fly effect on the original movie,
right,
that was every bit as disturbing as anything anyone has done in the 70s or 80s to that audience in that time. They had never seen anything like it.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not taking away from the fact what you're saying at all. I mean, I completely understand and know what you're saying and agree. It just, for me personally, as a personal preference, of course, is I like a remake of The Fly based on the special effects they were able to pull off.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not taking anything away from the original. And I know if I was back in the 50s or 60s, seeing that movie for the first time, I'd have been freaked out.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So, I don't know. I think we did a decent amount of discussion on The Fly. You have anything else to say?
No, I think we did. We pretty much said it all there. So,
well,
I think we can move forward.
I think in conclusion, we both recommend you check out The Fly if you've not.
Definitely.
And I also recommend you check out The Fly, the original Fly, as well as the sequel. There's a nifty box set with the three original Fly movies. The third one, forget about it. It's not worth
it. Forget about it.
Yeah, it's not a great movie, but the original two Flies with Vincent Price are actually very good, as is this one. So, and I'm also going to put a plug in here. There's a sequel to this movie, The Fly 2, with Eric Stoltz, that I don't believe any of the original cast, other than John Getz, returns for that one. I actually really enjoyed that movie, too.
Oh, yeah, I haven't seen it, so it's worth checking out.
Yeah, it is. I really enjoy it. In fact, there's a gag that got cut out of this movie involving somebody's face getting puked on with the fly goo.
Oh, nice.
That is put into the new one. That's put into the sequel. That is killer. There's another iconic effect scene. It doesn't match this one, I don't think. I really don't believe that it does. But it's a very good movie. And I also had it in my collection, so I just thought I would mention that.
Cool. I'll just give it a shot, man, definitely.
If you can get a copy of The Fly, too, do check it out. It's pretty cool.
Will do. I can find it.
This is the one from this one.
All right, wonderful. I will definitely give it a shot.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you guys are going to hear let's go
ahead. Ninjas.
Hmm? Ninjas.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as ninjas, and if you keep talking about them, they'll come to your house and stab you. And you live in Japan, so that's entirely possible. Konnichiwa. Yeah, anyway. We'll probably do is we'll go ahead, and since you said that, we'll do Sensei Cinema. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll have some Sensei Cinema, and then we'll probably take another break and come back and have some Mom and Pop Video Shop. And
right.
We'll take another break and come back, and Jason and I will be back to talk to you some more and wrap the show up. What do you think, Jason?
I think it's a great idea. Shinitaika.
That was a terrible accent.
Ora! Mokasukuna, John! Shinitaika.
California roll. That's all I got.
Oh, maki zushi roll.
Oh!
Sayonara.
Buddy, you just be quiet and go eat a raw horse or something.
Ooh, a raw horse is good. Alright.
Tasty. See, when we make a glue, you guys eat. It's weird.
Exactly. I love eating Mr. Ed.
Wilbur. All right. So, you're wasting your time listening to the Got Munchers podcast, and we'll be back right after this.
There has never been a more savage motion picture than Raw Meat. Beneath modern London, buried alive in plague-ridden tunnels, lives a tribe of once humans. The raw meat of the human race.
But how could they survive so long without food?
I imagine as each one died, the others ate him.
They were like raw meat, a sinister evil that festered for generations in its moldering tomb. Neither men nor women, even less than animals. Their strange hunger driving them to prey on the young and the strong. Raw meat. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without a parent. There has never been a more savage motion picture than Raw Meat.
Rock and Roll High School, the school where the students rule. The new principal hates the students, but the kids take over and rock the roof off the school. Dig out the sounds of Paul McCartney and Wings. Fleetwood Mac, Devo, Nick Lowe, Chuck Berry, Tom Rundgren, Vince Fabric, Velvet Underground, Roundville Station, MC5, Eno, Paley Brothers, Eddie and the Hot Rod, Alice Cooper, and starring the Ramones! Rock and Roll High School! Where did you keep one of your best?
So, here is the Sensei Cinema segment. That's a lot of S's, and I think I always say that, but I'm here with Steve. Dude, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good on a Sunday.
It's a beautiful, beautiful Sunday. At least in Ohio it is. I don't know what it's like out in your neck of the woods.
It's not too warm. It's overcast, but, you know, it makes a good day to be lazy.
Yeah, well, that's a good day. That's every day for me, but. So we have some more exciting Asian cinema.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to cover this time?
Well, I got three movies. They're kind of from got one new movie and two older movies. We're going to discuss The Five Deadly Venoms, which is a classic of the Shaw Brothers. Mm-hmm. A Golden Harvest movie from 75 called The Man from Hong Kong. and also the new movie that's coming out, I think nationwide or in a limited release. It's called Blood the Last Vampire.
Cool, very cool. So, well, let's just get right to it. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, we'll start with the one that you know that we'll have the most conversation about, and that's okay. The one that you watched with us, and that's the Five Deadly Venoms.
Yes. Yes.
That's yeah, right. I mean. Yep. It's a classic Shaw Brother picture. I mean, it has an interesting concept, and it kind of stands apart from all the other movies of that era.
You know, I agree. I mean, I guess we should probably give them a little plot synopsis. You want me to do this one since I've seen it?
Sure. You are pretty good at synopsises. Well, synopsi.
I have vast abilities in synopsing. Stuff. So, yeah, but basically, and of course, step in if I'm screwing something up. There's the what is it, the Venom School or the Venom whatever of Kung Fu?
Poison Clan.
That's
Poison
right.
Clan.
The Poison Clan, yeah. And they have the five different styles. And the movie opens up with the last teacher of the Poison Clan, working with his last student. And he basically is like, he's dying because he says, you know, I've been unable to cure myself. I'm dying. So that's pretty obvious. So he's dying and he's talking to his last student who he's not been able to finish his training on. And the Poison Clan has like got a terrible reputation. They've done some bad things. And there's another teacher who's since retired, who left the clan, who has a ton of money, and I guess what the teacher that's still alive or the teacher who's dying says to his final student, go find this guy and get his money and use the money to or get him to donate the money so that, you know, we can maybe, I guess, sort of get their reputation back up by saying, you know, for the Poison Clan. And he's also like, and be aware – and I'm not quite sure why this was true, but as soon as like you find him, the five other students that he had trained are also going to go looking for the guy, and the five students, like, they don't know their names, they don't even know what they look like because when they were training they were wearing masks, and so the final student goes to this town to look for the other teacher after his teacher dies to get the money again to try to I can't think of the word, but basically get the reputation of the Venom Clan to – or the Poison Clan, I should say, to rehabilitate. That's the word I was looking for, to rehabilitate their image. And, of course, he gets there. And, yes, the other five guys are there, and they all know different styles. I think it's what Centipede, Snake, Scorpion – Lizard? Is it Lizard, the one who runs on the wall?
Yes. Yeah, you got one more.
And Frog. I remember Frog.
No, it's Toad. It's called Toad, but, Toad. You know, close.
It was close. Toad.
But Toad is the strongest one.
Yeah, Toad is the strongest one, but they all have their different styles, and he gets there into this town, and then there's, like, chaos going on because the guys of the other styles have all infiltrated various levels of town, and there's all this intrigue going on. And basically, there's a murder, and all kinds of, like, just, like, insane stuff goes down. And I was surprised, really, how interesting the plot was. Not that I'm ripping on plots for Kung Fu movies, but let's be honest. A lot of times, they're very simple revenge flicks, you know? A lot of times, not all the time, but this had a very interesting plot, and there's like a lot of layers to it. But you know, the student, in addition to finding the guys for the money, who's also to basically check on the previous five students that his teacher had taught, and it was his job basically to make sure that they weren't using their training for evil. Because I mean, the whole point of the movie is oh, excuse me, sorry. My bad, guys. But the whole, like I was saying, the whole point of the movie, I thought, was for them to like reclaim and rehabilitate the image and reputation of their clan or at least of that. It's not really a clan. I guess it's more of a school of kung fu. And so that meant, you know, get the money, give, you know, donate it, and do good with the money that was made from our training, and then make sure the other students aren't up to evil, which would continue to obviously wreck the reputation of the poison. I guess they do call it a clan, don't they? Poison clan, but
mm-hmm.
But yeah. So, you know, I see, and I'm not a very good synopser, but I really did. That's kind of the story, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's also a very, you know, I mean, just want to make sure that everybody knows that if they want to get this DVD, I got it on Amazon Marketplace, but you want to make sure that you get it from Red Sun. That was the distributor, because it's a widescreen, it's aphromoric, it's very, very nice looking transfer.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the same one you watched on your recommendation, and it's nice to see that somebody, because in my opinion, this is a really cool movie, and it was nice to see somebody put that much effort into the transfer. And not only that, but the sound is great. Transfer, it looks mm-hmm. awesome. And then, you know, the thing that really blew me away is again, the story's great, but then the kung fu is just, it's awesome. The fight choreography and the way the fights are shot, they're just killer. The way they're bouncing off the walls and
mm-hmm.
great stuff. And then, the final student, and I forget the character's name. But the one student, the last guy, the one that's basically trying to track everything down and make things right, it's kind of cool because for the most part of the movie, he almost acts like his comic relief.
Right. And, I mean, in the center part of the movie, he's not even present for a good 20, 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he shows back up at the end. But and it's not like one of those, hey, what the heck happened to this character disappearing? Everything flows and it makes sense. And I just thought it was cool that he's kind of playing the comic relief, and then you have, you know, this weird dynamic where four of the five students pretty much find each other very quickly, and they, mm-hmm. you know, their conflict becomes fairly obvious, and then there's all this political intrigue, and then Scorpion, who I think is, they call him, they don't only go by name, but they also refer to themselves as like number one, number two, number, depending, I guess, as who got trained first.
Right.
And they explain all this very early on at the beginning of the movie. But, like, number three is Scorpion. Scorpion really doesn't reveal himself till the end. And you have basically this really cool dynamic where you have the students that are fighting against each other. And then in the end, I also thought it was interesting that, was it Snake, number two, kind of mm-hmm. has this revelation towards the end. So, you know, he does something good on his way out to redeem himself.
Yeah, Now, this movie was so popular back in the day that if any of these actors got back together again, they referenced it some way. Either they made a movie, I don't know what the original title was, but they did release one as a Return of the Five Deadly Venoms, and it had some of these actors in it. I mean, anytime that any of these actors got together, more than one or two, especially on the DVDs or the VHSs, they make sure that you know this has got the Venoms in it. And so, I mean, I have a few of those. You know, there's like the Chinatown Kids one. There's also another one that I hope to talk about next month or next show. It's called Super Ninjas, which is one of the craziest movies ever.
Cool.
Like I say, I think there's one called Mask Avengers or something like that I have. But, you know, as far as anybody who likes kung fu movies, classic kung fu movies, almost anybody will recognize when you say, I got this new movie and it's got the Venoms in it. As far as the individual names, you can forget about it. I can't even pronounce them. But it's a great movie. I hadn't watched it in a long time. Actually, they showed this on Showtime a lot back in like 2004 because I used to watch it really late at night when I was at work. So it's kind of fun to watch that. And they had a double feature of this and what was it? I don't know. I can't remember it. But anyway, it was really fun to watch it again. And definitely check it out and make sure you get the Red Sun version DVD.
Now, did they ever do an actual sequel to this? Like an official one? Or no?
No, I mean, most of them are don't make it through the first movie. So,
true.
So, the Return of the Deadly Venoms really only has the actors in common. The story is not the same, and it's not as good, but it's pretty good, you know, with the same kind of a lot more kung fu to make up for the lack of story.
Cool. Yeah, I mean this is a solid movie, and I'm glad. And it's just weird, dude. I've seen a ton of kung fu movies, and I watch a lot of Asian movies, and I'd managed to totally missed this one. I'd never seen it before.
Yeah, it's kind of cool when you know, because I used to show stuff like this on TV back in when I was a kid back in the 80s. So I'd seen a lot of these, and then of course now you get to revisit them again, and some of them are very good, and some of them don't hold up at all.
Yeah, well, I would say this is probably my second favorite kung fu movie ever.
Well, I'm glad I could introduce it to you.
Yeah, thanks a bunch, man.
Yeah, sure.
That was cool.
Yeah.
All right. So what's next?
Well, the next one I was going to order. I watched them. I watched the new movie that's coming out next week in I'm not sure how many theaters. It's called Blood: The Last Vampire. It's a full live action version of an anime that was made back in the 90s, and it's a pretty I would say it's pretty famous anime, which it's a really good one. The style and everything it takes. I guess I'll go over the story details here in a second. The anime itself was less than an hour long. So flash forward almost 12, 13 years or more, they made a live action version, and it's kind of unusual because it's English language, and with Japanese and American actors. The story takes place, I believe, back in like in the 70s or late 60s.
No, I've actually seen the original Blood the animes. I've seen the original Blood
Okay.
animes. Have you?
I've seen just that one, mm-hmm. the Blood, The Last Vampire. I wasn't – you thinking there's more or
– There's a second one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, there's a second one. You saw the one that was worth watching.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So, I mean, it's pretty much a remake of that – that anime with a little bit more story and filler in it. The story takes place, like I said, in the late 60s or 70s in Japan at an Air Force base. But before we get there, we have a little fight on a train with this young Chinese girl. Her name's like Seiya. And we find that she's a vampire or half vampire, and she's basically hunting down and tracking down all these vampires and killing them. She's searching for one lady vampire. We find out later what her reason for finding her and wanting revenge. And she's led around by this almost like a government agency called the Committee, who are her basically leading her and then pointing her to all these vampires. The next mission was to infiltrate this military base, this Air Force base in Tokyo, I believe. And of course they enroll her as a teenage high school student, and she meets up with the daughter of the base commander, and we see that they're kind of two girls are kind of bullying this the commander's daughter, and they're going to keep her late for some kempo training. And, of course, she's got her little bamboo stick ready to train. And then they pull out live swords, and they start whacking at her. And then Seiya comes in, and basically these two girls are vampires, and she pretty much cuts them up in little pieces. And that leads the commander's daughter to find out that, you know, about all these vampires and such. And we basically leads to a big battle in this small Japanese town, which is filled with vampires. And I mean, it's just Seiya and this girl, basically Seiya kind of moving around and slicing people left and right. And then later on, we see a bunch of transformations of these other vampires into like winged creatures or almost like dark werewolf looking things. And it from there it goes on to she tracks down the vampire, I guess the oldest vampire, and we find out why she wants revenge, and we also find that they have something in common. The movie itself, I don't know. I mean, the last 20 minutes of it really picked up, and I really enjoyed that a lot. But I wouldn't say it's a great, movie by any stretch. But if you happen to see it, you know, I'm sure it would be certainly be entertaining. I guess I would call it a B movie for sure, and maybe even, you know, not, I would give it slightly above average recommendation.
So this looks like it's going to come out on it's actually going to hit the theaters, maybe at least limited release.
Yes. And now one thing I want to discuss is a couple things. I mean, there's certain parts of this movie they use CG a lot. They look there's at the end it looks freaking amazing, but evidently they blew all their money on the ending because in the meanwhile, I mean, you saw Star Trek VI, right?
Yes.
Okay, you remember when they went weightless and they were, you know, shooting the Klingons and the blood squirt out?
Yeah.
You mean how crappy that looks?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's what you got here, except it's not purple. It's dark brown or something. I mean, every time she slices somebody, it's almost the exact same
squirts. Do they do, like, slow-mo or?
Yeah, well, no, some of it's slow-mo, but most of it's not. Okay. I guess they're trying to hide the fact that it looks like crap, but... And then there's also those creatures I was talking about that they're like giant bats. And one of them grabs the girl and is running across the sides of buildings and stuff. And, I mean, that just – it looks horrible. I mean, I don't know. But all the live-action stuff and then the ending CG stuff, I mean, all that looks good. But for whatever reason, they rendered or started working early on the finale and then had to cut some corners during the rest of the movie or something. But, nice. Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see something. I love some of the shots at the ending, but definitely just a little bit slightly above average.
Okay. All right. Well, and that will – that is – that was, you said, Blood, the Last Vampire?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's coming to theaters in limited release. So that kind of – seems like it gets kind of a maybe sort of – if you're bored, kind of check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I've read other reviews, and it's kind of basically the same kind of a, you know, hey, wow.
So far we got one great movie, one meh.
Yeah.
All right, and the third one is one that I really wanted to check out, and of course I just didn't get a chance. I actually have the DVD, and I just didn't get a chance to watch it, so that's my bad. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. But that is the Man from Hong Kong, right?
Right. Yeah. And, you know, this is kind of cool because this must be one of the first Golden Harvest movies, which is kind of cool because they produced a lot of Jackie Chan movies and stuff like that in the 90s and late 80s, I guess. But this is from 75. It stars, what was his name, Jimmy Wang Yi or Yu,
mm-hmm.
and the former James Bond, George Lazenby, and also Sammo Hung, which, you know, he was in a lot of the movies with Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
And also he was star of a martial law TV show back in the 90s, I think.
That was a spin-off from, wasn't it Nash Bridges?
Yes, I think. Well, something like that. I know it was a spin-off of something. I think it was by the same guy, or the creator or something. So more than likely, probably that's the case. Basically at the beginning we find Sammo Hung, he's on a bus and, we see a bunch of guys watching him and it turns out that those guys are cops and he's basically smuggling in some coke or something. And, it leads to a kung fu fight on a big cliff. And the funny part is that the guy finally catches Sammo Hung and puts him in a half Nelson, headlock, and drags him down the mountain or whatever. And they call in, since they're trying, this guy's a Chinese citizen and he's wanted in Hong Kong. They call in an inspector from, Hong Kong. And that's that Jimmy Wang Yi. And, he comes over and he ends up beating the crap out of him, trying to interrogate him. And when they're taking him to a courthouse, Sammo Hung gets assassinated, and then from there they try to find out who did that and who's Mr. Big of this organization and all that stuff, which it's pretty obvious, you know, even to them, they get a name, and it turns out to be George Lazenby's character, which he's playing like a James Bond villain, which is kind of funny. And also he has his own little theme song, which is kind of a takeoff of the James Bond theme. He lives in this really expensive looking apartment. It's very, very Bond-esque kind of setting. And from there, the Chinese inspector is trying to get him, and they end up knocking him off the side of the road, and he gets saved by this girl, and then they nurse him back to health. And of course, next thing you know, that they're driving in a car, him and that girl, and they get knocked off the road, and she gets killed. So he's not having very much luck with cars. And I mean, there are some good kung fu fights, but not a lot. There's one in a dojo that goes on for a while and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. But he ends up actually going to a party with George Lazenby, throwing. And George Lazenby is wanting to do it. It says everybody, we're going to do a kung fu exhibition. So they all get in a fight and stuff like that. And George Lazenby's whooping his ass for a while. And then after that, they leave, and then they kill the girl that he, in the car, and that kind of puts him in the revenge mode. So he's just like full on for George Lazenby, and he ends up breaking in, and they have a kind of a showdown fight, and wackiness ensues to this, standard formulaic ending. I don't know. The main guy there, the Chinese inspector, has zero charisma with me. And George Lazenby is like the mate, every time he's on screen, he's the star of this movie, It's kind of a strange thing to have the bad guy being the dominant character of the movie. And, the guy's just really horrible, and I don't know what else to say other than it's just I probably won't revisit this movie very often. If I do, even though it has a catchy theme song, I probably will not revisit it. So I was a little bit disappointed.
And it's funny because I haven't seen the movie yet, but what turned me on to wanting to see the movie is I saw a documentary about Australian exploitation movies of the 70s. And I don't know how much of the movie was shot there because you've seen it, but I know a lot of it was shot there. And actually a lot of the creative people behind it were Australians. And they had brought and I can't even remember his name. You've said it a couple times. But they brought the Chinese so-called star of the movie. They brought him into Australia to shoot. And when he got on set, the stuntmen hated him. I don't know if you noticed, but like his love scenes are kind of awkward.
Yeah, very awkward. He looked like he's taking. Yeah.
She hated that guy. The actress hated him. George Lazenby disliked him, doesn't have anything nice to say about him. Because they interviewed basically everybody who was involved. A lot of people that were involved in a movie for this documentary. And they're just like, he was a complete creep. They brought him in, and he was rude, nasty, and didn't want to be there. And it was funny because you said Lazenby was the star. Well, they actually wrote him a couple of extra scenes because the more they shot with him, the less they'd have to shoot with the supposed good guy.
Yeah.
Which everybody hated on set. So
even at the end, it's just like it ends and everybody, the other guys are acting like a typical movie when it ends. The bad guy's got what it coming to him, and they're laughing, the guy just looks around and just walks off the screen. This guy really would be only good if he was part of a group of actors that were, like the Five Deadly Venoms, because to be honest, he doesn't have any charisma. He doesn't, he's not a Bruce Lee character or anybody like that who has muscles, or any type of body. So, it's just, I don't expect too much anymore, but, it was interesting for the scenery. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of Hong Kong movies especially in the late 90s when they were getting ready to transfer ownership of Hong Kong back to China, to mainland China, yeah. A lot of them moved over to make movies in Australia. I know Jackie Chan made a couple movies in Australia because it was like a lot of, you know, a lot of population are Chinese, and I guess maybe it has a little bit better rates or whatever you want to say. But of course, I think mostly now everybody is kind of settled down, and you know, it's been 10 years since that's happened, so nobody's really gone back to communism in Hong Kong. It's kind of like its own little entity, and a lot of more people are just, you know, going back and just making movies there like they were before that, like John Woo, and I know Jackie Chan's made a few extra movies there too. So you don't see a lot of this going on anymore, but you know, it's definitely a little bit of a scenery that's a little bit different. But you know, I guess they picked the wrong leading man. That's the bottom line.
I think they might have. though I hear you. I mean, they even were very complimentary. They said his martial arts were excellent.
Yeah, I mean, they are, but yeah, they got the canned special sound effects, which is always nice to hear. But yeah, I don't know. It's I guess, you know, you get spoiled sometimes with the martial arts movies, so you can't expect more. But you know, for what it was all right. But definitely had somebody sticking out like a sore thumb in the cast.
So would it be accurate then in saying in this installment of Sensei Cinema, we have one high recommendation and two kind of okays?
That's definitely.
If you were giving them a 4-star rating, where would you put them?
Well, I mean, I would definitely give, Five Deadly Venoms at least close to a 4, probably a 3.5 or something like that. Blood, the Last Vampire, I'd probably give a 2.5, kind of average. I would like to give it a little more, but this I'd probably give it like a 1.5. Man from Hong Kong.
Cool. Yeah, and I completely agree on the Five Deadly Venoms because I think it is probably so far, and I've enjoyed most all the Shaw Brothers movies I've seen so far. This is probably one of my favorites. And I actually got a real blast out of this. So.
Yeah, and well, wait till you see the wackiness of the Super Ninjas.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a beautiful transfer by the same people that made this DVD, but completely hilarious dialogue and over the top martial arts stuff. It's very good.
What was the name of that company again? Because anybody that puts that much time into restoring these movies and putting out versions like this needs plugs.
It's called Red Sun. Now, I mean, these are I'm not sure how new releases these are, but I mean, you just look on Amazon and you can, you could probably find the, I got mine at the marketplace for under $7.
Cool.
So. I mean, they're out there. So you just got to be careful because I know I've bought, you get the DVD, you look at it, and you look at the back, and, the screens look great and everything else. But when you get it home, it looks like somebody's, third generation VHS.
Yeah.
So I'm very careful now to since I found that at least, Dragon Dynasty does a lot of great restoring of martial art movies, and there's some other companies, but you just got to be very careful. Maybe read a lot of reviews, and Red Sun definitely gets my thumbs up for quality transfers.
Excellent. So great. And just a little bit of preview. Next show that we do this, you're going to be wanting to talk some Super Ninjas, right?
Yeah. Super Ninjas from Hong Kong.
So you guys look forward to Super Ninjas. Hey, thanks again for stopping by and doing another one of these segments.
You're welcome as always.
And how goes Euro Cult?
Well, it was pretty good. I know I did a Blair Witch episode last week.
I dug a lot of, so that was cool.
Yeah, it was my radio drama debut.
I'm in the woods.
You hear the special effect crickets back there?
Yeah.
I'm in the woods.
Yeah, that was awesome, dude.
I'm working on a new one.
I enjoyed it, though, man. It was just, it was kind of, you were being creative and you're being goofy and you had a good time. But I do, just a side note here, I don't like that movie at all. I think I made that pretty clear, but.
Different strokes.
You got it, brother. You got it. But I just had to put it out there that I, John from GutMunchers.com, do not like the Blair Witch Project. I said it.
He doesn't approve. He does not approve of that message.
No. Well, you know, dude, for me, I just, not to get off on a tangent here, but, you know, who cares? It's our show. We'll get off on a tangent if we want to.
Yeah.
I just thought, I've always kind of watching the movie. And the funny thing is, like, I actually had an opportunity to interview, and it never worked out for me. But I talked to the guy a bunch. Was one of the co-directors, Eduardo Sanchez.
Cool.
And he's a nice guy, and he's very cool. And I've liked some of the other projects he worked on. But you know, the truth is I don't know why people think it's so groundbreaking. It was just, it made a ton of money, and it cloned a lot of like wannabes. But, you know, like the found footage thing, you and I both know that's not new. They didn't break any new ground. They just got lucky and got picked up.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you go back 19 years, you go to Cannibal Holocaust, and it had found footage. So,
but even
that whole
point of view shooting a kind of documentary style, you can even go further back to, I think it was a Peeping Tom from the 60s.
Yeah, that, you know, had some of that quality.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, Cannibal Holocaust was badass, but this whole the Blair Witch thing. And you know, dude, I gotta be honest with you. I did not see the documentary. I didn't see anything having to do with Blair Witch before I saw the ads. And so it's not like I like had somebody clue me in on the fact it wasn't real. I knew it wasn't real. It's a friggin' movie in the movie theater. It's not a documentary.
Well, I mean, if most people had sense, I mean, when you watch TV, like, you know, back in the day, you know, I used to watch Entertainment Tonight. Mm-hmm. They actually interviewed the people in it. So if you're, you know, if you're that dumb, yeah. I mean.
But you know what?
Yeah, I mean, it's just.
Let me be a complete creep here. I suppose the people that believed in the Blair Witch Project are the same people that tune into Ghost Hunters every week going, oh, my God, there's a spirit.
Yeah. Well,
it's like they're the same people that wander around abandoned houses with recorders going, is there anybody here? So I'm just trying to be an ass and alienate people. That's kind of what I'm good at.
You got to be good at what you're good at.
Yeah, but. I got my Blair Witch rant out, so I'm happy that the Blair Witch Project rant out. And I own the DVD. I've watched it. In fact, I never saw it in a theater. I saw it the first time on DVD, and I'm like, okay, that was interesting. Have you seen the last broadcast?
I have. Of course, after that, a few years later, I did see the last broadcast. I liked it. Up until the end, I did not care for the ending. So,
yeah, I actually liked the last broadcast a little bit better, because I like the idea, but then I'm with you on the twist at the end. I just was kind of like meh. But at least the last broadcast, you get to see the damn killer.
Well, have you seen
the ending of Blair Witch? Always really bothered me because it just goes thump, woo, spooky, dude. You didn't even spring, like, you know, a few hundred bucks on a witch costume? Come on.
Have you seen any of the other kind of rip-off movies? The one I got that I kind of like is the St. Francisville Experiment or something like that.
I saw that at a Cinema Wasteland, actually.
Oh.
I liked it. I thought it was – I mean, it was totally a Blair Witch ripoff, and it was done on the cheap. And it wasn't done as slickly as the Blair Witch, but it was interesting. I thought it was cool. And again, in that one, you actually get to see some stuff. The thing about the Blair Witch was it was like twigs, and then the movie's over, and you're supposed to be creeped out by it. And it never worked for me, really. But yeah,
well, I mean, to me, I liked it. I mean, it did, you know, they went to the thing where, you know, you could use your imagination more. You know, the St. Francisville experiment did show a couple of things. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of saved that for the money shot near the end, which, you know, to be honest, I got it on DVD. And it, you know, it did, you know, kind of, you know, come at you and scare you a little bit because, you know, I was in this mindset where they're not going to show anything, just like mm-hmm. the Blair Witch. And then they showed a little bit, nothing major, but, it, you know, it was kind of spooky.
Well, and that's my whole thing is like, even if, for me to send chills up your spine, it's the glimpse that you know you saw something, especially it's one of those things like when you've seen something and the character you're watching hasn't seen it and you want to yell, dude, behind you. You know, that works, and like what you said with St. Francis, that one kind of had a few little bits of that, that you knew there was something there, and they didn't see it,
right?
You know, so to me that was really very effective, and try as you might and stare as you might at the tube when you're watching Blair Witch, you don't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. The last thing with the guys in the corner and you hear her screaming, it just didn't do anything for me.
Well, it did a lot for me in the theater. I tell you what, it took all the air out of my lungs. It was like, yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that movie. I like documentaries, so it's almost like a documentary up to that point. And then everything goes to shit. And then, that little last ending where he's standing in the corner and, bam. Yeah, that got to me. Everybody in the whole audience is basically you couldn't. It was just no oxygen. It was like, damn, we got knocked in the head.
Yeah, well,
but that was just my experience.
This won't be the first time that a movie didn't get me, and I didn't like something that a lot of the people like. So, I mean, you know, I'll just put it on the list with Martin, where people go, "That's a great movie." Well, I'm a huge Romero fan, and I think Martin's not a great movie. So, what do you want? You know, I get Ed with that one every time. So. But yes, so we've actually managed to venture off into some Blair Witch talk, but I think it's appropriate. What is it, like the 10-year anniversary?
Yeah, I think I heard that actually next Friday was the 10th anniversary.
Cool. Well, excellent. And before we got sidetracked, you're going to be doing another Eurocult podcast? Yes, please.
Yeah, I am, but I probably won't be finished for a couple of days. Okay. I ordered the new DVD release of Sleepless from Amazon UK, and it's pretty cool. I haven't watched it yet, but they got some new artwork on the cover. When you open it up, you actually have a mini poster of that artwork, and it's pretty cool. It's like from Shameless, I think. It's a part of the Shameless company, which they're – releasing all this Eurocult stuff over in England.
Yeah, I've seen
and,
them. They look good.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't got any more. I was thinking about it. But they're kind of having an offshoot, kind of like doing these DVDs in the style of old video nasties and stuff like that. And it's called Arrow Video or something like that. But, I mean, it's the presentation as far as that's concerned is good.
Cool.
I haven't really got – watch it yet, but you know, Sleepless is a kind of you don't hear much talk about it. I mean, it's not one of his best movies, but it is one of the newer giallos out there. That's pretty good. Actually, it's one of the only newer giallos out there.
As a completist, is probably one of those things that I'll eventually try to track down.
Yeah, I know. I got The Card Player, which I hate that movie, but I got it. I don't know why it's $3.
I think The Card Player came in that. Argento tin that I got.
Yeah, it's in there.
Yeah, and I don't hate The Card Player, dude. I actually had a great conversation with a quite intoxicated Ken Kish at Cinema Wasteland.
I was there.
You were there. Yeah, you were there for our conversation. That's right.
Yeah, me and him agreed.
Yeah. So you and a drunken Ken Kish agreed The Card Player was shit, and I'm like, no way. You're nuts. You're crazy.
Well, it's just like it's Dario Argento's CSI, basically. That's the way I think of it.
Yeah. Now, do you like Hitchcock?
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I think that's got, you know, I like that way he's playing tribute. I always love seeing Italy like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it makes me want to live there someday. But, yeah, I mean, I liked it. Of course, it was a TV movie, but still it's
– I thought it was very good.
Yeah, I mean, I like it a lot. So, yeah.
So, cool. Well, you know, I know you have the whole Eurocult podcast thing going on, but someday you and I need to spend some time on the show here talking giallos. Maybe you and Ed and I talk some giallos someday. That'd be fun.
Oh, you know I'm up for it.
I know.
Anytime.
we'll get all sleazy and black gloved killer up in this joint. So,
but, hell yeah.
All right. So, well, we got some Argento in there too, which was kind of cool. But yeah, I think we had a great discussion and had some fun. And again, like I said already, I appreciate you stopping by and keep up the good work. And also, before I forget, I'm waiting for another YouTube video, some Eurocult. So I know what you need to do. Here's a subject. Here's a video you need to make. Ready?
All right. Yep.
You need to, and this is a request, so I'm giving you a request. I want to know the five sleaziest Eurocult movies in your collection.
Okay.
See?
I can do that.
Top five sleaziest Eurocult. And I want to know why, too. Not me not saying detail, but be like, yeah, there's like so much nudity in this movie, I felt dirty. So.
Oh, well, I could come up with a few, right? I mean, you got the what was it, Joe Amate, couple movies. He combined porn and horror. So those are definitely sleazy.
Yeah, I think those are also dreadfully bad too, aren't they?
Yeah, they. I mean, I haven't seen Porno Holocaust, but I've seen Erotic Nights of the Living Dead, and it's not too good.
I hear things about Porno Holocaust. I hear things that people want to kill themselves after watching it because it's so bad. So I hear things.
Well, and people got like giant things on their testicles, probably some type of warts. So yeah, not pleasant viewing. That's the horror of the horror movie.
Yeah, I would imagine so. It's kind of like it's kind of like watching the red box of Thriller on a widescreen, high def TV.
Yeah.
And it's like. Yeah, 70 porn shot. Hardcore 70s porn shots never meant to be seen in high def. So, yep, that's the video you should do next. So, but there you go. Sleaze, sleaze, sleaze. And then you do that, and then I will hit you up with a video response of the sleaziest stuff I have in my collection. And then maybe we'll get Ed to do one, and it'll make us both look stupid because Ed has the sleaze.
Yeah, he's got some. I emailed him for see if he had some sleeves for me, but he didn't have what I was requesting. So
well, and the funny thing is too is talking about sleeves. I was in the earlier part of the show here when I was we were reviewing some stuff, and actually I don't remember if it's the earlier part of what. So it's the earlier part of the show or not, but Jason and I were talking. About some stuff that he sent Lewis, and apparently, friggin' Lewis girly pants boy, which that's not meant to be mean, but he does wear girl pants and they're shiny.
Yeah.
But like you know, he asked Jason to go buy him a bunch of tentacle porn.
Yeah.
And Jason actually did it and sent it in the mail, and I'm like, Jason's like,
oh my God,
I felt dirty. But I'm like, oh, my goodness. Jason actually went and bought tentacle porn for Lewis. That's awesome. So we definitely have something to rip on Lewis about the next Wasteland.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I think we probably should get this wrapped up and get it done. And I know I've already said this once before, but thanks very much for doing another one of these segments. All right. Well, thanks, Steve. Stop laughing. Well, for those of you who might not realize this, we've tried to record the last 3 minutes, 4 minutes of this segment, and we've been disconnected like four times. That's why he's laughing so hard. But
sorry.
You'll notice how masterfully I put it together. So with the editing, no one will ever know. They'll just hear you laughing like a maniac.
There you go. That's all I want.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, John.
You're welcome. All right.
See you next time.
See you next time. Bye. Don't run by the way.
the invisible barrier between good and evil. Equinox. The weird, the occult, the supernatural, before your very eyes. As four teenage boys and girls challenge a devil cult, fight a fearsome prehistoric monster to save their lives, their sanity, their immortal souls. Equinox. In supernatural color.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
My God, the damn thing's moving!
When the moon turns red, the dead shall rise and walk the earth. From the gates of hell, they have finally come. The gates of hell. No one under 17 admitted without parent or certified adult guardian.
Hey guys, sometimes real life intervenes, and this is one of those times. So, gotta let you know, due to some scheduling conflicts, we were unable to get the mom and pop video shop with Ed Demko recorded for this month's show. Have no fear though, because it will return. It's just for right now, we don't have it. So, but I'm sure that you guys will miss it, but it will be back, so don't worry. But I just didn't want to leave a hole here and not have you guys know what was going on, so that's what's going down. Other than that, have a great day, and hope you enjoyed the show, and Jason and I will be back in a moment to wrap it up. Bye.
Angels are pretty, angels can fly, and here is an angel that can make you die. You've got no style, you've got no flair, all you do is fight and swear. So say your prayers and make amends, because your life story is about to end.
Gotta look at a real zombie.
And we're back on the Gut Munchers podcast. You've just finished listening to Sensei Cinema and the Mom and Pop Video Shop. I want to thank both my man Steve and Ed for stopping by and doing that. Don't forget, Steve does Eurocult, both the podcast and some YouTube videos. And Ed also has YouTube videos for BloodTypeOnline.com, in addition to being a
sexy beast. Addition to being a sexy beast.
Okay. That was disturbing. You're getting all John Morgan up in this place.
I know.
But anyway, so let's talk plugging ourselves. Product placements, Virgin Superstore, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we're going to do Dracula 2000 up in here.
Yeah, no, we're not, no. Well, actually, yeah. if Jerry Ryan's involved, I'm totally involved with, like, yeah, woohoo.
Uh-oh. Hello. I thought you said you're going to be involved and Omar Epps was involved.
Oh, well,
burn,
you know.
Burn, dog, burn.
Oh, dude. You're right, man. Unlike you, I didn't go to straight camp, so.
Oh, damn. Hey. I'm going straight tomorrow.
Uh-oh. They tell you what to stay away from.
Oh, I can't wait to go to straight camp. It's going to be so lovely.
Yeah.
It'll be fantastic.
Yes.
I'm doing this without my shirt, by the way.
Oh, that's disturbing.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Let's talk.
Mm-hmm.
Talk and amongst yourself.
This is the final episode of the Gut Munchers podcast. Thanks for...
Exactly. You killed it.
No, you killed it.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry.
All right. I think we're going to have... You ever listen to Howard Stern?
No, I'm not allowed to listen to things that suck.
Oh, snap.
Oh.
He used to do the homo room.
Oh.
Where he would like
that's
to take...
That's where Steve hangs out in, so that's what...
Oh, no. Dang, dude. I'm going to have Steve, like come on the show sometime and lay the smackdown on.
Oh, he ain't gonna like, yeah, he probably like the SmackDown because that's how those gays fight.
Dang him.
Oh, dang.
Okay, dude, Steve, well, not me at all, dude. It's all Jason, man.
Man, Steve, John sent me a 20 spot, just tell you that.
Well, see, Steve knows you're full of crap now because he knows I ain't got $20. So, anyway, yeah, well, you know, you're listening to a podcast for Gut Munchers, and we're associated, obviously, with the GutMunchers.com website where we do new written reviews of movies every day. We've got a webcomic that we put up every week, a new comic. We have this podcast that we do once or twice a month. And we have a YouTube channel where between Jason and I and Steve on occasion, we put a new video up every day on our YouTube channel, which is Gut Munchers, or well, it's youtube.com/user/gutmunchers. There's a link to that from the Gut Munchers homepage. So, you know, there's no excuse for you guys not to find us on YouTube or find us on the web because we're Gut Munchers. Type in Gut Munchers and you'll find us.
Yeah, and you'll see my sexiness everywhere.
Well, there goes any chance of picking up new users.
Oh, man, we're going to have new users breaking the door down to see my hairy chesticles.
Okay, yeah. just so as not to scare anyone away, I mean, I can't stop them from the wife beater, but I do enforce a shirt's required video rule, so don't worry about it. But
I'm going to rival Runk in my next video. I'm going to do it shirtless also.
Yeah, well, that was kind
of... It's going to be the chesticle versus chesticles.
Gotcha. That's disturbing, but.
But talking about sending people some love. You mentioned Blood Type Online and then Eurocult and those definitely guys work closely with us. But you know, we got Dead Pit and they do everything that we're doing, the same thing. They're the innovators of it all with. Radio show and YouTube pages and all that. As well as you got Slasher Club and
Russ over there with Slasher Club doing some cool stuff and
Rick of the Dead.
Yeah, I wish Rick would do another video. He hasn't done one in forever. Rick, get up off your ass and do a video.
Yeah, come on. What are you doing in Ohio?
Yeah, so, you live in Youngstown, dude. There ain't nothing going on in Youngstown. Do a damn video. Buy some VHS.
I know there's tons of others. You know, Mad Puppet Death and Pizzal.
Pizzlewell.
Critter Fan. I think he goes by Critter Buster.
Yeah, Critter Fan's good. Country Trash. Country Trash does some good videos.
You can't ever forget a Country Trash. Oh, man. He just did a new set. He's been doing a segment about put these VHS on DVD. Have you seen that?
Yeah, those are good, man. Those are good.
Man, that's so good. Oh,
exactly. I've actually been using it to track down VHS that I want to watch.
I think we should get Jack on the show sometime and have him do something, man, for real.
Yeah, we could do that.
I think that's a good idea, quite frankly. I'm going to talk about my own idea as a good idea. But yeah. But I do think...
I could probably use a new co-host.
Good night, New York. but yeah, I think definitely Jack would be a great guy to have on the show. Because he just I mean, if you watch his videos, as you and I have just mentioned, I mean, he's a wealth of knowledge. So maybe we could have him on like a VHS-related show of some kind. Because I think he definitely knows what he's talking about, so... Anyways,
yeah,
but those are some people I like to watch. I think John would agree; those are some pretty classy groups of guys there and a gal for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, it's all good. It's fun, and I enjoy doing the YouTube videos. And I just want to tell anybody out there who takes the time to actually watch them, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and I appreciate the feedback.
I enjoy your YouTube videos.
Well, you ought to, because I'm awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because I never comment on your videos because I feel like it's like patting yourself on the back, you know, like, you know, because obviously I'm not going to sit there and go, John, your YouTube videos suck, man. And so I don't ever like comment saying how great it is, but I just want to let you know live and in color that I do enjoy your reviews of videos. They're quite entertaining and I enjoy it. So
well,
there
thank you,
go.
Sir. And, you know, I dig your Jason Around Japan stuff. So to pat you on the back, even though I'm not doing it until you put a shirt on you.
Yeah, it's kind of sticky. If you put your hand on my back now, you'll get your hand stuck to it.
Yeah, dude. What kind of country doesn't, like, have, like, indoor air conditioning and stuff?
Yeah. Seriously. I don't know, dude. It sucks, though. That's what I'm telling you.
Is it any wonder that your irradiated dinosaurs are so pissed off?
No, I don't know. I'm about ready to go in the ocean, though, and hang out with them, because that's probably the only cool place to go.
Godzilla, man. If Godzilla had friggin' AC, be, like, chilling. Like, man, and I could roll up out this house and smash Tokyo... Or I could chill here watching some cable, you know. And
yeah, I heard that Godzilla is a big fan of the Wuzzles.
Is it? What the heck's a Wuzzle?
You don't remember the 80s show, The Wuzzles? Are like they're like little pockets, like they turn into like these little round balls, and you open them up, and they're like little like half-bred animal, dinosaur, human-looking things or something. There was actually a cartoon for a while.
No.
Oh, hold on, wait. You're like 75. I forgot.
Buddy.
That was after your time.
I'll slap you in the head.
Yeah, man, you're just going to talk about how you're being in the 50s movies. Don't give me that.
Yeah, well, you're living in the land of tentacle porn and pixelation, dude, so.
Yeah, well, I'm having to go buy sick, crap Japanese tentacle porn crap for him.
For who?
Lewis, I like tight pants.
Get out. Lewis likes the tentacle stuff, does he? Girl pants, I'm telling
and
you.
And lo and behold, I found it. I couldn't believe it.
He's crazy, man.
Yeah, I just bought him I just sent it to him yesterday, a whole big chunk of death films I found here.
Yeah, Lewis
likes real people dying and stuff. I guess it's like Face of Death, but the Japanese version of them. I don't know. I can't even look at the covers. It makes me sick. Like, I'm almost going to throw up. I felt like I needed to go to church after looking at the boxes.
Well, hopefully Lewis is going to send you some good stuff.
Yeah, we have a trade war that worked out, so, but cool. Anyways.
Cool.
But we better close up shop. I don't want to – we could be talking forever.
That's true. So. That's true. Well, I guess you've wasted enough time listening to the Gut Munchers podcast. We're going to have another show lined up for you. I'm not entirely sure what we're going to do. I got a couple of things working out, so it'll be – right now it's a mystery show. But
We got some irons in the fire.
Got some interviews possibly. We have some exciting stuff that could be coming down the line. So we will be back probably in a couple of weeks with another show. So keep an eye out on the site, and we'll let you know what's going on.
Thanks, Jason. All right. Talk to you later. Yep. I'll see you guys later. Thanks for listening.
All right. Well, goodbye, all.
Bye-bye.
Trip last night into a land of fright. There were people half dead. There were people no heat. Where was I?
Where was I?
Where was I? Still unknown. Yeah, I am a man